Oh, thanks for joining us here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate here on a Tuesday. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor here in our Las Vegas studios. Make sure you text the word passport. Passport to 702-365-9200 for your chance to win the Wyoming Adventure. Oh, you hear the music, and it's time for Jason Fitz, Raider Nation's Grammy winner, Yahoo Sports football host. He's also a great host with Fox Sports Radio on the weekends, Juilliard grad, UNLV child prodigy, and here with us on Tuesdays. We're happy to have you, Jason. Thank you so much for being with us. Hey, before we begin, I wanted to talk to you about the interview you did with Josh Jacobs, now with the Green Bay Packers, but I thought it was very interesting to learn about his new perspective with his new team. And at the same time, can the Raiders' backfield be better without Josh Jacobs? 1 second here for Jason Fitz here on Raider Nation Radio. We'll get to him in just a second here on R&R 920 AM.
As I muted myself. Apparently, I don't know how to use my
cell that's
phone.
Good. Okay,
that's
cool.
What's happening. It's good. No, Josh was great, and he made it very clear that once the Raiders didn't want him, Green Bay was a place he was very interested in from the outset, but he also made it pretty clear that his hope initially was to stay with the team. And yeah. I think that's interesting because we have to remember at the end of the day, this is all business for everybody. Like the players, and so often as fans, we ask for loyalty, and I just don't understand that because realistically, teams are always going to do what's best for their salary cap and their future. Players are going to do what's best for feeding their families. So this felt like one of those moments where he wanted to be with the Raiders. The Raiders wanted him, but there was no middle ground on what the value was. So, you know, it really reestablished to me the fact that, you know, this is one of those unfortunate moments that this happens because of the running back position. Now, that being said, we have to go back to a couple of years ago when the Raiders had arguably the best wide receiver, the best running back, and one of the best pass rushers at the time in Crosby, Devontae, and Josh. And what did that get them? 6 wins?
Yep.
Right? So, like, if you're a team, you got to look at it and say, okay, it's not just about individual success. It's about what we need to win football games, and they need to allocate money in other places. So, can the backfield be better? I mean, Josh is one of the best in the league. I think the backfield can match that production. It might not look as good. It might not be as easy. But realistically, I think we also have to look at the rest of it. Like, if Josh Jacobs is there on a franchise-type deal, on a massive contract, is Christian Wilkins there? I don't think so. So those are the things. That's like the Lady Liberty Justice scales we have to think about when we talk about this process.
Yeah, and we also have to consider the fact that the running game got better when Zamir White was injected into the scene and had to play those last four games. Do you think that played into it a little bit? In the back of the Raiders' minds, they're like, you know, we would love to have Josh, but it looked pretty good when Zamir White was running the ball, and it's not hard to project that over a 17-game schedule with Zamir.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, go back and watch Zamir's college tape. Zamir's college tape was better than any of the running backs that were drafted this year. So if you're the Raiders, you're looking in the room and saying, hey, we're not going to draft somebody near the top of the draft because there's nobody that can top Zamir. What you really wanted to see was you wanted to see Zeus go off. And I think in the last month of the season, the most important thing is that not just that the numbers got better, but it felt like his patience in the right gaps got better, right? So his running got better. Now, this is going to be a new running system with this offensive line. I get that. But if you're Zamir White, yeah, you have all the tools it takes to be a very good back in the NFL. And I don't think you need a 2,000-yard rusher in this world. Like, you need somebody that can get in and get the yards when you got to have them. And Zamir's perfectly capable of doing that. Showed that a lot and showed a lot of burst in the last month of the season, too.
We're speaking with Jason Fitz here from Yahoo Sports at Jason Fitz on X. Then speaking to that about the value of running back this year, we had talked about the lack of success for certain running backs to not only get that second contract with the team that drafted them. How do you feel like the value of the running back is going now this year? Because especially as you said, like running backs now, like can you get the yards when we ask you to get them? And how important is that? Because we saw some guys getting their contracts redone this year, but that doesn't necessarily reset the market for running backs.
Yeah, I think you really got to pay attention to the minutia on those contracts, too, because you hear a big number, but then when you start to see it more often than not, it's a bunch of one-year voidable deals, right? So one thing I did ask Josh, what his advice would be for running backs coming up because of the way guys are getting paid. And the first thing he said without hesitation is make sure you can stay on the field for all three downs.
Okay.
And I do think that that's real for where the running back position is going. You're going to have to be an absolute game wrecker that can do multiple things, that can be a huge part of the passing game. Those are all going to be, you got to have incredible speed coming out of the backfield. Like, I think right now it's more like in college football, we always talk about the athlete, the ATH now. I think the running back is a little bit of that. It's a little bit of somebody that's a jack of all trades that can beat you a million different ways, death by a thousand cuts. That's what you have to be. The days of having a Derrick Henry in the modern NFL that you're just going to rely on to pound the rock 300 times and just get it done, those are so few and far between. I just don't think that's a sustainable model.
I think the name we're looking for is Christian McCaffrey, somebody like that. Yep. That's a guy who's a worthy investment and can do it all. Switching gears a little bit at running back, and the reason I ask is because I've been watching the Hard Knocks on the New York Giants, and obviously there was a big to-do with Saquon Barkley and the Giants, and now he's with the Philadelphia Eagles, which is a nightmare scenario for the Giants. Have you caught any of the Hard Knocks with the New York Giants? And B, how do you feel like the Giants came off? There was the quote from one of the scouts on Christian Wilkins, which was a maddening, just how are you making money with that kind of an evaluation as a third down pass rusher, and B, their handling of the Saquon Barkley situation.
Yeah, and I've watched a little of it. I'm usually opposed to Hard Knocks because I think mm-hmm. they did a terrible job of covering this team, the Raiders, when, you know, Antonio Brown's year was there. I think mm-hmm. that was just a joke of a show that year. They didn't give us real insight. The whole world knew that there was a meltdown happening. So I'm usually anti-Hard Knocks. I think it's interesting that it got to this point, over the course of this process. And I've talked to three different former players, and they all told me the same thing with the Giants. They all believe that the Giants were trying to make a definitive statement about Saquon because Saquon said some things they didn't like on his way out the door about wanting to play for a contender. I think it's a terrible message and a terrible look for the Giants, right? Like, look, I realize guys are going to go play wherever they make the most money. But if you're trying to convince people that your locker room has this great camaraderie, you know, absolutely dumping on the player as he's walking out the door isn't a win for anybody. It makes the Giants look small. It makes them look small-minded. And it gives billboard material. Like, if it was a player saying the same thing about another player, we would be freaking out about why would you possibly energize the player that way? That's exactly what the Giants are doing. The best thing they could have ever said about Saquon was nothing at all, or just say absolutely glowing in this show. I'm stunned that they gave some of those quotes. I'm stunned that they're out there. And also, when it comes to the Wilkins stuff, my God, like, look at the numbers. The numbers don't support any of the information they're giving out there. Like, the pass rush win rate, the pressure percentages, none of those are supported by what the Giants scouting staff is telling you. So I don't know what the hell they're looking at.
Yeah, it almost seems like there was like a certain amount of disagreement in the room just on facial expressions alone after those comments were made. Not everybody was on board with that, and that doesn't bode well for a team that's trying to figure out how to win games and trying to find their identity with a coach who's more than on a hot seat.
Yeah, a coach that's on a hot seat and Daniel Jones is going to have to save him. Like, look, I don't care what fan base we're talking about. If I said, hey, Daniel Jones has got to be the savior of your franchise and save your coach's job, you don't feel very good going into the season with that, right? Like, and I think that's where they are. I think this is the make-or-break year for Dable, and all of a sudden, you know, the coach that 2 years ago, we all need to remember this. 2 years ago, after his first year, it was, oh, my God, look at the way he built the staff, and he empowers everybody. He's doing it differently. He's so great. And then the wheels fell off completely, right? So there is a level off that happens with some coaches, and I think the Giants are in absolute disarray. Their defensive line is going to be very good this year. The rest of their team, I don't know what to expect from them at all. I could see the Giants being a top five pick in the NFL draft. And I haven't seen anything so far on Hard Knocks that makes me think that this organization is fully capable of handling that level of leverage in next year's draft.
Yeah, for sure. Talking to Jason Fitz from Yahoo Sports here locally, Jason. You know, I did a roster breakdown about a week or so ago, and there's so much to like about this Raiders roster. Everywhere you look, there's talent on all levels of the defense. I think the offensive line has a chance to be a lot better than people probably presume at this point. There's weapons galore. I think Zamir White, we talked about him, and, you know, you throw in Alexander Madison, and I think Dylan Lauby has a chance to get on the field pretty early. There's just a lot to like about this roster, depth-wise as well. But then it keeps coming back to this question. All right, what level of quarterback play are the Raiders going to get? Because to get to 10 wins, and I was talking to an NFL general manager earlier this week about this, or over the weekend, I should say, and he was like, if you're shooting for 10 wins, you have to get consistent play from your quarterback. There's going to be a clunker here and there, but you have to get primarily really good performances from your quarterbacks week in and week out. Where are you on that, whether it's certainty or question or concern or worry or anxiety, in terms of the Raiders quarterbacks being able to put together an efficient enough season where they can be knocking on the door for that 9 or 10 wins?
I honestly believe if you looked at the rest of the roster and you put a more established quarterback in there that people liked better, the Raiders would be a hot playoff pick for, right, a lot of media. I believe that. The problem is it's going to take one of two things. It's going to take the final, like, the final awakening of Gardner Minshew, right? It's going to have to take this Rich Gannon-like moment out of Gardner Minshew, or it's going to have to take this meteoric leap from Aiden. And, you know, the easier thing for the team is the meteoric leap from Aiden. But asking for that is so difficult. The one thing I would say is that I think the Raiders have addressed so much of it with the rest of the roster that their plan is, let's have a great defense and let's have an offense that can at least hold the ball, control the ball, and let's limit our mistakes. I think instead of looking for 300-yard game after 300-yard game, what we should be looking at squarely with this offense is the completion percentage, third down completion percentage, and the interception to touchdown ratio. Like, that's going to be what makes or breaks quarterback play this year. Aiden O'Connell or Gardner, either one starting, doesn't need to come out and throw for 5,000 yards. What Aiden or Gardner doesn't need to do is throw 16 picks. Like, you can't give the ball back over and over and over again. I anticipate this year a tedious offense where you're just every single drive, you're on the edge of your seat and you're saying, golly, we just got to get points. Got to get points, boys. And then on the other side of it, you're sitting on the edge of the seat because you're ready to watch this defense absolutely kill somebody. So I think they built the strengths to try and mask the weakness, but certainly in this league, nobody feels good. Like, I don't feel good about the Raiders getting to 10 wins because I don't trust the quarterback situation. I think they feel like an 8-win team, you know. But if Aiden takes a huge leap forward, then heck yeah, they're a 10-win team, no doubt. You know, if the Chargers struggle the way I think they're going to struggle in year one under Harbaugh, because every time a big-name coach comes in, there's a struggle, I think the Broncos are going to be trash this year. There are four opportunities for wins on the schedule there. They've shown they can beat the Chiefs. Can you get to 5 wins in the division? Is that possible? Because if you can, then all of a sudden, 9-10 wins starts to be something you really hope to achieve. But yeah, being real, I think – a high hope would be C-plus quarterback play, and that's what's going to frustrate everybody this year.
Jason Fitz, Yahoo Sports, here on the Morning Tailgate. We talked about AFC North teams yesterday on the Raiders' schedule, and early on you got the Ravens, you got the Browns to deal with. Which of those defensive lines are going to give the most problems to the Raiders' offensive line that is still trying to figure out how to gel with all the new components?
I think the new defensive coordinator system for the Ravens is going to make a little bit of an impact. So I'll go with the Browns.
Okay.
And frankly, I think the world is sort of sleeping on the Browns right now. I'm talking about Deshaun Watson, just the football player here. Let's be very clear. But Deshaun Watson, the football player, hasn't been good enough. But they were bringing guys in off the street we've never even heard of, and they were still winning football games last year. And even when Deshaun wasn't good, I think he was 4-1 as a starter. There's too much talent for the Browns to be screwed up. I think the Browns and the Bengals are the cream of that division.
Okay.
So it really becomes, can you sneak away? The Steelers, I do not believe in their quarterback position. I do not believe in the Steelers overall. And frankly, you know, I think the Ravens are going to be very, very good. But I'd rather catch the Ravens in the first 4 weeks than in the last 4 weeks, because it's going to take a second to adjust new coordinators. We saw that last year for the Jets. We saw what a difference that makes. And there's a reason that they lost Mike McDonald over to Seattle as a head coach, because he's a great defensive coordinator. So I think that even though there's a ton of talent, the new free agency that's come in to the Ravens, the new coaching, I think it's going to take the Ravens a second to settle down.
I'm glad you mentioned the Bengals, because I really feel like there's something that keeps telling me, if I was a betting man, to go put some money on Joe Burrow as the MVP candidate. I just feel like he's itching to prove some people, or to reestablish himself and show people, like, you're kind of forgetting about me over here in Cincinnati. What are your thoughts on the Bengals, especially with a healthy Joe Burrow?
I think if Joe Burrow's healthy, he's the second-best quarterback in the NFL.
I agree.
So, like, that's how much I value Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's very fair to turn around and say, hey, let's start establishing the phrase injury-prone around Joe Burrow, because frankly, if it was Lamar that had had this many injuries in a row, we'd be screaming it from the mountaintops. So he is injury prone. I'm worried about the injury history of Joe Burrow at this point. That being said, that offense is going to be absolutely unstoppable. But their defense was not as good last year. Take a big step backwards. They still won 8 games without their starting quarterback and with the defense that was hot garbage. So I think the Bengals have a real chance of winning 12 or 13 this year. And that's just presuming that Burrow comes in, he's healthy. And I think you're right, Vinny. If Burrow is healthy, he's going to be an MVP candidate this year. Because he even mentioned it on Pardon My Take yesterday. He feels like he's being overlooked, and he understands why. But, man, chip on the shoulder is going to be real for him. I really think the Bengals are going to be explosive. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see the Bengals end up with home field advantage in the playoffs this year.
You know, we kind of talked about a team that got hot last year, like the Rams, also on the Raiders' schedule. The Rams will face the Raiders coming off their bye. So it'll be a nice, you know, rested Rams team at SoFi when this goes down. How do you feel the Rams have now positioned themselves? Do you feel like they have made the necessary upgrades to improve on last season?
Well, no, because you can't fix losing Aaron Donald. And I think the biggest part about losing Aaron Donald is it changes everything that defense is going to do. It changes the way their defensive line rotates. It changes their pressure percentages. Mm-hmm. It changes literally everything. So to me, I think their defense is going to be the issue. Look, I trust Sean McVay. I think Sean McVay at this point could take the worst Raiders receivers we've ever seen in our lifetime and turn them into 1,000-yard guys. Like, he has got a gift when it comes to getting the most out of offensive players. There's no doubt about that. But and Stafford played some of the best football of his career last year. But I don't trust the defense. So I think the Rams take a step back here because I don't think they're going to be able to stop a lot of people. So what's interesting about the Raiders-Rams matchup is that it's strength on strength. Let's look at one of the best defensive lines in the league taking on an offense that I think is as well-coached as any in the league. That's going to be a real opportunity. But yeah. I honestly believe most teams are going to be able to move the ball effectively against the Rams this year. I think they're going to be a little soft. And if they're a little soft, there's an opportunity to sneak a win.
Yeah, the one thing I looking at Aaron's stats from last year, they were good, but they weren't great. So it's not. I feel like they're not replacing 2020 or 2019 Aaron Donald. It was 2023. Not to say that it's an easy task replacing him whatsoever, but it's not like they're replacing the force that he was. So maybe that helps a little bit. And I to me, looking at that game with the Raiders and the Rams, it's one of the more fascinating games on the schedule, because I think that the Raiders' defensive line should be able to get some pass rush pressure on Matthew Stafford, and he's shown in the past where he could throw some interceptions. So I think that the Rams actually, or the Raiders actually, have a pretty good chance to go into SoFi Stadium and compete. Here's my question about SoFi Stadium: the Raiders have stunk at SoFi Stadium. For all the talk about that being a second home game, they have not been able to take care of business in terms of the wins and losses. Do you think that that can turn around this year, especially now that they almost has to? They're playing 2 games there against the Chargers and the Rams.
Yeah, I think it can. And look, I don't think that there's any curse to SoFi. It just happens that they haven't played particularly well there. That's something that, again, you look at some of these moments. I'm looking at Antonio Pierce and saying, it's his job to get the guys fired up, which he's going to do, right? It's his job to make sure the guys are focused, which he's going to do. And Travis Kelce made that clear, that even the Chiefs felt that, right? So I think that's going to be a big part of it. And where it becomes an interesting, the Rams game becomes an interesting challenge, is because Stafford has seen so much football. What's going to be really interesting in a game like that is, can a veteran quarterback that sees it coming get rid of the ball fast enough? And if he can, how does this secondary hold up against that? That becomes really interesting. But guys, I think the Chargers take a massive step back this year. I think they're one of the most overhyped teams in the NFL. And it's not because I don't believe in Harbaugh. I think long-term, I think the Broncos and Chargers long-term are going to be very good. But what happens? We saw with Gruden, a big-name coach comes in, he rips it apart, right? So Harbaugh's going to come in and try and run all of these concepts, and then it's not going to work the way they want. Everybody's going to feel like he's shortchanging Justin Herbert, and he's going to say, we just got to get my guys out in here, and we're going to start this whole rebuild process. It happens every stinking time. So I think the real opportunity for a win comes against the Chargers. The Chargers are a very beatable football team for this Raiders team this year.
Where do you find the biggest deficiency is for the Chargers right now? Because you could take a look at a lot of position groups that you're supposed to have your key skill players in position to win games, but yet they have a bunch of new faces, both on the defensive line and defense, and especially at wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, I think their wide receivers are, at this point, if we're just going based on what we know, they're a joke. right? Like, there's got to be, and you're asking Justin Herbert to do so much with that receiver core. Like, I think the defensive line is weak, but the wide receivers, that wide receiver room might be one of the worst in the NFL this year. Now, can they prove something over the course of the year? Sure, anybody can. But if we're just applying universal benefit of the doubt across the room, like, the Raiders have the better, I think at this point, they have the better offensive line. They have the better receiver room. They have the better running back room. They got the better defensive line. Like, we go, they got the better linebacker group. Like, go up and down the list. Like, it might be a push in the secondary. And obviously, the Chargers have the better quarterback. But that, it's a team game. One guy is not enough. So I think the Chargers are deficient all over the place.
Jason, we love having you on. Thank you so much for coming on today. Yahoo Sports, Fox Sports Radio, Raider Nation's Grammy winner. He's got more gold records than some of you have friends. And we appreciate the time you give us on Tuesday. Thank you so much, brother.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a great week.
Thank you. And there he is with the autumn wind, Jason Fitz on Raider Nation Radio. A lot of people are asking that they didn't hear that that Hard Knocks audio about Christian Wilkins. Mm-hmm. Mind if I play it just as like a...
Yeah, go for it.
Because it was just something that happened, you know, in and out. And each and every week, there's always just a little quip that that comes from that show. But this is one in which they're looking at free agency. They're in that offseason, that part of the offseason, trying to get better. And this is from their director of pro scouting, Chris Rossetti, from Hard Knocks, saying he doesn't think Christian Wilkins is a difference maker.
Christian, same thing. This is Dexter's best friend. You know, I don't think he's a difference-making pass rusher on third down, which is what we need opposite Dex. But a really good football player will do well for himself.
Dex texted me to text me about him the other day.
Who did?
Dexter asked what we thought, so.
Yeah, they're really close. Obviously, Leo.
Plenty to ponder.
Yeah, he doesn't win on third downs, Christian Wilkins.
The stats show otherwise. That's the point, is that the stats show otherwise.
And this is coming from a team that had 36 sacks last year as a team.
Yeah,
that's almost near the bottom.
It's like it's you know, I've been down this road before. I remember when Gilbert Arenas was a free agent leaving Golden State, and he ended up signing with the Washington Wizards on a massive deal. And I was literally talking to an NBA scout who worked in a front office, and he was like, "I just don't know if he's a true starting guard in the league, or if he's, you know, a guy that comes off the bench. I don't know if he's a point guard or not." I'm like, "The dude is a sniper. He is a lethal scorer. Watch, you know, you just look at the minutes that he was playing in Golden State, what he was averaging that second year. How do you not see it? You're a guy that gets paid to do this for a living." Now, the only thing that happened with Gilbert Arenas was that he got hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
He suffered a massive knee injury later on, but when he was right, he was one of the most prolific scorers in the NBA. Just a, what do they call him, Agent Zero? Mm-hmm. He was a sniper. I'm like, I was just thinking to myself, I can see it. I saw it all the way in high school. Like, I'm not no expert or anything like that. I don't pretend to be. But you're sitting here and telling me that you don't know if he's going to be able to be a starting guard in the NBA? Are you nuts right now? And you literally get that. Sometimes, you know, from scouts, everything's an opinion. I get it, but the level of wrong sometimes is glaring. And to say that when the stats show completely otherwise, it's like, are we talking about the same player here?
Doesn't seem like it.
Are you just discounting the numbers that showed that he was one of the better third down pass rushers and most productive third down pass rushers? I think the majority of his sack, it was just.
Yeah, 33 of his 66, rush attempts came in on third down.
Quarterback pressures, but
quarterback pressures.
Yeah, but now people will say, well, that's because on third down they're throwing it more. So yeah, whatever.
But you still need to have that production.
I know exactly.
That stat needs to back it up,
right?
And who were you going to get otherwise? Like, who else was out there?
Look, if you're saying that, you know, with our defensive line paying the guys that we have to pay, and maybe they did bring in Brian Burns, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that was a better fit because it was an outside-inside thing with Dexter. That's a valid argument. Like, look, you know,
sure,
you could pour some more money into an interior defensive lineman, but, you know, that's a lot of money to pay two interior defensive linemen. Maybe our money would be better spent, which is what they did, bringing in a Brian Burns that can create the pass rush edge or off the edge, kind of like Max Crosby and Christian Wilkins here. That's a great argument. I get it. I understand it. That makes a lot of sense. But to say, like, he's just not a difference maker. What? On third down, he's not. Holy cow.
Oh, it's great. I'll tell you what, we're going to have a conversation with Greg Bell. He's a Seahawks beat writer with the News, Seattle News Tribune here in Raider Nation Radio, as we'll also kind of uncover his thoughts on the NFC West as a preview. That comes up next here on Raider Nation Radio.
Might need some Dos Catas tequila after all of that. Just I tell you this, Clay, I went through a stack of old scouting reports when I was with the Lakers. Just, I used to love doing that and seeing some of the disparaging things. And you would look, you would read it, and you're like, this guy has no chance. And then you get down to the name Larry Bird,
yeah, right.
Bill Walton. You know, it's like scouts always look for the negative, it feels like, rather than it just feels like that sometimes. Anyway, and it's easy to get sucked into all that. However, what looks great on the scouting report all times is Dos Catas Tequila, and our great friends have partnered up with La Casa Cigar and Lounge over at Tivoli Village. Our great friend Mike Prieto, a huge Raider fan who owns La Casa. He and Les Kekahuna over at Dos Catas Tequila have paired up great cigars at La Casa with the great labels of Dos Catas Tequila. So if you can get yourself over there, it's a great environment, great scene, music every single night, and sip on some great Dos Catas Tequila with some specialty cigars that Mike has set aside specifically for the various labels of Dos Catas Tequila. It's a great night. If you want to just go shop for some Dos Catas Tequila here locally, Lee's Liquor and Total Wine both have all of the products that Dos Catas produces. And if you're not here in Las Vegas, don't worry. By the way, get out here. Why not? What are you thinking? I know it's hot, but it's the place to be. But if you aren't here, just go to doscatasspirits.com. You can make whatever order you want online, and it could get delivered wherever you want, wherever you are. All the details at doscatasspirits.com.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate here on R&R 920 AM. It's Vinny Bonsignore, Clay Baker, and you. And joining us now is Greg Bell from the 206 from Seattle as we go deep into our NFC West preview. Greg, of course, the great Seahawks writer with the Tacoma News Tribune, a host on KJR, former West Point grad and a U.S. Army captain. His greatest assignment, perhaps, is being a father of twins. And we're happy to have you with us, Greg. Thank you for joining us. And, you know, can we just start off with the Seahawks? Just because, you know, they just barely missed on the playoffs, but yet they still fire Pete Carroll. Do you feel like this is a rebuilding process that they're venturing in now? Because they still seem to have enough talent to compete with both the Rams and the Niners.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys. First, I should ask, is it really safe to have tailgating in Las Vegas in mid-July?
Well, you have to stay hydrated, even though alcohol might dehydrate you. But I think if you got the continuous flow of some sort of liquid, what could
and
go wrong?
And air conditioning.
Yes, air conditioning.
120 degrees down there or something, man. I mean, where it gets crazy up here, it's 90 in Seattle. People are freaking out. So all the best to you guys down there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we should have like a Hands Across America with tailgating all the way to Seattle and find out who's going to survive and who will not.
To answer your question, this is a rebuild, but what's interesting about Seattle's rebuild, I mean, they have 22 new coaches, including the new head coach, the youngest coach in the league, Mike McDonald. They went from the oldest coach in the NFL and Pete Carroll at 72 to Mike McDonald, half his age, the Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator. They have 22 new coaches in all. Only one coach came back, Carl Scott, the secondary coach. 22 of the 23 coaches are new. All three systems are new. They have the new offensive coordinator from the University of Washington, Ryan Grubb. That in itself is an experiment, to have a Power 5 college play caller go straight into the NFL and be a play caller months after he called a national championship game in college.
Wow.
The defense is going to be run by Mike McDonald, and he's trying to do it like he did in Baltimore with a lot of disguising and switching at the snap and confusing quarterbacks. And even the special teams are new. Jim Harbaugh's son from the University of Michigan is now the special teams coordinator. So everything is new. Guys, Geno Smith and DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, who's been here a decade, they're still learning the offense. It's not completely installed yet. Neither is the defense. They have brand new signal callers on the field in defense. Bobby Wagner's gone, so they brought in Tyrell Dotson from Buffalo to be the new signal caller on defense. Everything is new, but this isn't a three-win team starting over, right?
Right.
They were a 500 club last year, 9-8 for the second consecutive season. They missed the playoffs, which is why Pete Carroll's not the coach anymore. But they aren't starting from scratch, and they have a quarterback who's made the Pro Bowl the last 2 years, throwing for around and over 4,000 yards. So it is a unique deal that they are rebuilding, but not from the bottom, but from the middle, per se.
Right.
And so that gives them, especially on offense with the playmakers they have, it gives them some belief that they'll be there in contention. The problem is the line of scrimmage remains the biggest question mark and the biggest problem for Seattle in the NFC West, because San Francisco and the Rams just dominate them on the offensive and defensive lines every time they play. And until they close that gap, they're not going to win the division, which means they're not going to have home playoff games, which means they're not going anywhere. And they'll just be around a middling 500 club. And that is the priority here, to get the offensive and defensive lines fixed. It's why they drafted Byron Murphy with their number one overall pick from the University of Texas at the 12th overall pick in the draft. They're trying to fix the offensive line on the fly. They've got questions on four-fifths of the offensive line. They still have a ways to go to catch San Francisco, or at least be somewhat competitive with them on the offensive and defensive lines, and that is their biggest challenge.
So you mentioned Pete Carroll. The last time I had talked to him, and it was really right before they traded Russell Wilson, he was like, man, I am so fired up about this rebuild and this new journey. And you kind of felt like they were moving on from Russell Wilson, and it was another trek around the country for him to be able to go on another new journey. And he seemed fired up about it. It worked that first year. I know they didn't make the playoffs last year, but is that really the only reason that they moved on from Pete Carroll? It just feels curious to me that at this stage right now, they would go in an entirely different direction, when I just felt like just staying the course might have been the right move.
Well, we were surprised up here because Pete Carroll was the ultimate football authority. He actually had authority over the general manager, hired general manager John Snyder in 2010. So he had final say on all football matters, and it appeared he would be here as long as he wanted to be. And he was under contract through age 75. He was making $15 million a year. There would seem to be no reason that Jody Allen, who took over the team as owner after her brother Paul Allen died in 2018, was going to make a change, because she may be eventually selling the team as per the demands of Paul Allen's estate. So it would seem as though they didn't want to change the regime and who's in charge of the football ops and the whole football operation, while she could be on her way out as team owner and eventually selling the team in the next 5 years or so. Yet the defense got worse last year, and that was Pete Carroll's project. They were 30th in the NFL against the run in 2022. He spent over $100 million in new contracts. He used a generational fifth, a fifth overall pick, which Seattle hadn't had in a quarter century on defense. All that toward defense, and they got worse last year. They were 31st against the run, 30th overall. I mean, guys, it was like watching people trying to deal with the Bulls in Pamplona when they tried to stop the run. People just ran them over. Teams that weren't – Tampa Bay a couple years ago in Germany – I sat there in the stadium in Munich and watched Tom Brady audible out of passes to runs all day long, and the 32nd ranked run offense ran all over the Seahawks in Tampa Bay. Those things is the galling defeat at home to Pittsburgh when they needed to win on New Year's Eve to stay in playoff contention, when most of the lower bowl in Seattle had terrible towels and the Steelers ran for 200 yards on 40 carries. Smoking cigars in the locker room after the season-ending win at Arizona, even though they missed the playoffs, that young defensive backs were doing, they say, to celebrate the birth of one of the players' son, a few weeks ago. The optics of that looked terrible. And the bottom line was they got worse, even though they were still the same record at 9-8. They had an offense with playmakers and a quarterback and DK Metcalf and Kenneth Walker is a potential 1,000-yard running back, and all of that getting subverted by the defense just getting ransacked. And that was the most alarming trend, that Jody Allen decided, hey, you know what, we're going to make John Schneider now, after 12 years as GM, John Schneider is going to be in charge of all the football decisions. And they handed him the keys to the franchise, and that's the shift that went on this offseason when they fired Pete Carroll.
It's Greg Bell here with us on Raider Nation, radio host on KJR, and, of course, Seahawks writer with Tacoma News Tribune. Follow him on X at GBellSeattle. Then to the 49ers, you know, it just makes you feel like, since you look at all their starters on the depth chart, they almost have, like, at least a top 12 position player at every position starting. And do you ever feel, though, because of last year's inability to win the Super Bowl, do you find that, you know, that a window that has been open for a while is in the midst of closing?
Well, that's the way the league works, right, guys? I mean, because of the salary cap and people's contracts coming up and teams deciding they have to part with this contract when he gets older and they get into their 30s, it doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
And the league is designed that way. They schedule that way toward parity. They have the cap toward that way. So you can't do it forever. The 49ers are trying to do it. And they have left tackle Trent Williams is in his mid-30s, and now they re-upped Christian McCaffrey. He'll be entering his 30s. Brock Purdy will this time next year be a big contract issue for them and how much money they want to make him one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. That means 50-plus million a year. The 49ers so far have been able to do what the Seahawks did in the early 2010s. That is, win and win big with a quarterback under his rookie contract. If you can do that in the NFL, that's when you can spend the money and build a championship team around that quarterback because you're paying minimal salary on that QB. It's once that quarterback has his first contract and then goes into his second deal and it's costing $30, $40, $50 million a year, that's when it becomes really difficult to buy the players around him to make a championship team. So while Brock Purdy's under this rookie deal, the 49ers are making hay on signing everybody else, defensive tackles and linebackers and secondary and giving Ayuk potentially a new deal, giving Deebo Samuel a new deal, mm-hmm. George Kittle gets a new deal, you get a new car, you get a new car. It's like that as long as you have the rookie quarterback contract. Brock Purdy becoming due on a new contract next year changes the entire salary structure for the 49ers. It was at that point that the Seahawks didn't get back to a Super Bowl. It could be the end of the window when, not saying that when Brock Purdy gets a new deal, the 49ers are going to be tanking and off a cliff, but it's really hard to plug your holes with Pro Bowl-ready expensive free agents once that quarterback gets his second contract.
Well, you also have to draft George Kittles and Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel and Bosa, Nick Bosa. That's what the 49ers have done, which leads me to John Schneider, who now the guy that was hired by Pete is now in charge. And he doesn't have Pete there helping him with the draft, and that's fine. Now it's his show. But what's the level of confidence that John Schneider is going to be able to deliver those types of drafts without Pete Carroll there?
Well, that's exactly the dice roll that Jody Allen and her right-hand man, Burt Cold, decided to go with, because that is the unknown. And we won't know if Byron Murphy is all that he could be for a couple years still. So the jury's still out on that, but that is exactly the decision the Seahawks went for. Okay, let's just do it now. We decided that we're going to put John Schneider in charge of the operation, in charge of the coaching search, in charge of the draft, and let's go with him. Now, they only decided that again after he'd been doing this for 12 years in lockstep with Pete Carroll. But they've decided now is the time. Frankly, he's been hit and miss in the draft, as tends to be the norm in the NFL. He could not have been as successful as he was to begin his first three or four drafts. I mean, Richard Sherman in the fifth round, Doug Baldwin, unsigned free agent, Cam Chancellor in the fifth round, Russell Wilson in the third round. I mean, no way is he Earl Thomas in the first round becoming what he became. There's no way he was going to duplicate that. Bobby Wagner, second round pick. So it leveled out. You regress to the mean there after a while. But then recently, I mean, so far, Devin Witherspoon is the fifth overall pick. Looks like a fantastic pick for them.
Yes.
He was a stud last year. He's the best player on their team right now, and he's going to be the nickelback playing 80% of the time in Mike McDonald's new system. Made the Pro Bowl last year as a rookie starting at corner and moving inside at nickel on passing downs. McDonald's probably going to have Witherspoon more as a full-time nickel because he's going to be in nickel so much with the Seahawks this year. But it's suffice to say that it is now John Schneider's team. And we'll know in 2 or 3 years how that has gone compared to Pete Carroll's team.
Do you feel that for the Arizona Cardinals, if Kyler Murray can stay healthy on the field and they have talented players to throw to, do they have the potential to be a problem in this division?
They're always a problem for Seattle, and especially defensively, they seem to always get a pass rush on Seattle's offensive line. But overall, if their defense can get better, and that's what they've been trying to fix the last couple years, I mean, it was J.J. Watt and a bunch of old veterans. Now they're trying to start from young with draft picks and rebuild in a longer-term view. If that starts taking hold in Arizona, then they come back. I have the belief, I know Murray's had injury issues and it hasn't always gone well, and he's gone through so many offensive coordinators and head coaches down there, but I believe they can win with Murray.
Okay.
And when they get a running game behind him, I know they've had a couple good years with James Conner as their lead runner. He's getting older now and injured, and they have to have a replacement to be consistent in the run game. But to me, the key for Arizona is defense. It has been improving. It was improved over the course of last season. And if that defense continues on the track it ended last season, they're going to be better, yes. They're still an echelon or two behind the Rams and 49ers, but they're closing the gap fast on Seattle as their defense improves.
Things change really quickly in the NFL, but just looking at it on paper, the NFC South looks not good. The NFC East, we'll see with the Cowboys, the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not, you know, bullish on the Giants or the or Washington. I think the NFC Central has a chance to be pretty darn good. Maybe two, three teams fighting for a playoff spot out of that division. Could be four. Who knows with if the Bears get it turned around. But I also look at the NFC West, and I feel like three teams, and you also mentioned the Cardinals and you know, the turnaround that they can make with Kyler being there, you know, healthy full season. How many playoff teams do you think when it gets right down to it, and we're entering January, how many teams do you think can still be in the playoff hunt from the NFC West at that point in the season?
I think it's two. I think when you look at the NFC, I think Washington's going to really be improved under Dan Quinn. I'm a Dan Quinn guy. I covered him. I've watched what he's done in his career, what he did with Atlanta, and how he rebuilt the Cowboys defense, which was atrocious a few years ago. I think he's going to do something in Washington in a rapid way. And I could see them contending for a wild card spot, not the division title, but certainly in a playoff run. So that leaves probably a two playoff spots with the division title and one wild card in the NFC West. And it's still, it for Seattle's perspective, it doesn't do them any good. Their team history says it doesn't do them any good to make the wild card. It's been a decade since they've been to the NFC Championship game. And the only time they made the Super Bowl, the only three seasons, they had the number one seed in the NFC and had all home playoff games in the rain and cold and noise in Seattle. And when they don't, they might win one round and then go to Green Bay or Philadelphia or San Francisco in round two, get boat raced, and it's over. And it's been that way for the last decade. So Seattle's challenge is to get to number one. The problem is now the Rams have passed them. Everyone thought the Rams last year that was going to be a rebuild team, yet they still had Matthew Stafford. Their defense was better than expected. Nakua was out of nowhere fine as a rookie receiver. And all of a sudden the Rams passed the Seahawks. So now the Seahawks have to pass two teams to get to where they want to go, not just the 49ers. That's four games of their schedule, the Rams and the 49ers, that they have to improve on to even get to where they want to go. And that's the challenge this year for Seattle. I see two teams in the West, one wild card coming out of the West. I think really one wild card out of the Central and one out of the East. A more balanced conference than it's been in a couple years.
Greg, we absolutely love your work, and thank you for making time with us. We know you got your show coming up in an hour. Thanks again for your moments, and we look forward to talking again, perhaps when the season gets a little closer to becoming to fruition.
Okay, guys, enjoy the Raiders season. Stay cool down there. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you. At G-Bell Seattle, Greg Bell here with us, host on KJR, comes up after Chuck and Buck, Chuck Powell and the good guys down there up in the 206. All right, we have to unpack some great stuff that Greg gave us on the other side. We'll unpack it here. We'll get to the phone calls on the other side as well here on Raider Nation Radio. It's the Morning Tailgate. Thanks for being with us here as we wrap up the second hour of the Morning Tailgate. 702-365-9200 is the text line and phone number you can reach us. We'll take calls and reactions into the third hour as well as finish our NFC West preview on who upgraded and who didn't. Thanks again for Greg Bell jumping in from Seattle. Great information from him, and you know he's right as when you start to think of like, all right, you're a 9-win team, but yet everyone feels like you're in a rebuild. You got 22 new coaches. There's a lot of like reinstall that needs to happen, and for everyone to be on the same page. Perhaps this is a little bit more of a rebuild, but they have so much talent on offense that, you know, maybe they can close the gap and try to figure things out. But when everything is that new, I don't know how you can define what a rebuild really is, because still a lot of the fingerprints that were there from Pete Carroll's era are still very prevalent.
And unfortunately, it's not a reinstall. They're literally installing new. Like, it's totally new on both sides of the football. So they made a conscious decision to put it in the hands of John Schneider. I think they, you know, on one hand, you could say this about him, Clay. Maybe they were just honest about where they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and saying, look, you know, this is the 49ers' time right now, and the Rams have re-entered the party with a healthy Matthew Stafford and some really good young draft picks that have helped, you know, kind of prop them back up. Maybe it's just not, even though they were a 9-win team, they weren't prisoners of that moment and saying, we're a 9-win team that's just a couple players away from, you know, being a 12-win team or a 13-win team.
Reminds me of a 10-win team of the Raiders not too long ago.
Yeah, maybe what they really are is a 9-win team that's closer to being a 6-win team than a 12-win team, right? So, you know, that's always, you know, that's a hard pill to sometimes swallow, but sometimes you have to honestly swallow that pill. And they felt like, you know, going to make a move right now. Let's just go ahead and make the move. There might be some repercussions to that move. It might mean taking a step or two back, but for the good of the franchise, for the good of the team, especially if they can handle their business through the draft over these next couple of years, be right back in a couple of years. So that's kind of what they you know, and maybe still try to win some games and knock on the they knocked on the door of the playoffs last year, right? Is there reason to think that is absolutely out of the question? No, I you can't say that about the Seahawks. You can certainly look at them and saying, yeah, I mean, you know, with some right breaks, maybe they can rebuild and still compete. Not necessarily for a Super Bowl championship, but for you know a playoff, you know, berth. Now here's the question that you have to ask: Is that really where you want to be? Just kind of knocking on the door right there, you know, with Geno Smith as the quarterback, who I don't know if he's any kind of a long range answer.
Yeah, are you set up for long range success?
No, because I don't think you have the successor to Geno in the building right now. You know, to do that, you have to get your quarterback, and to do that, sometimes you have to lose pretty big. You don't want to be in that middle ground. It's kind of like where the Raiders are right now in some ways. You know, to be able to go get, you know, one of the premier young quarterbacks, you have to be bad enough to be drafting in that portion of the draft, or get lucky like the 49ers got. Not lucky, I mean, I hate to call it luck. The 49ers made a great draft pick with Brock Purdy, and he's not just a product of that system. Go look at his numbers. He's pretty damn good, especially in some key areas. But most likely, you're going to have to lose a bunch of games to get access to one of those top quarterbacks, or go to free agency. That's why I've been advocating for the Raiders to at least consider if Dak Prescott is available. Maybe that's the answer, you know, for them. Either way, if you get caught in that middle ground, you're going to get stuck sometimes in that middle ground, and that's not a good place to be.
Into the third hour we go. It's Raider Nation Radio. We'll do a little four down territory, and we'll hear from Jason Fitz and Josh Jacobs in a little talk they had last week here on Raider Nation Radio. The home.